Moncrief on News Talk.
In 1971, a man hijacked a plane in the United States. He demanded a ransom of $200,000 and he got it. Then he put on a parachute and jumped off the plane. And since then, no one knows what happened to him or anything about him other than the name on his ticket, D.B. Cooper. Marty Andrade is the author of Finding D.B. Cooper. Good afternoon, Marty.
Good afternoon.
So just to establish facts in as far as we know facts, it was a flight from Portland to Seattle, relatively short flight, I suppose. It was his name, in as far as anybody knows what his name was. Was it D.B. Cooper or was it something else?
So it was actually Dan Cooper. When he was at the counter, he gave his name and he said it like James Bond. He said, Cooper, Dan Cooper.
And was he dressed like James Bond?
Well, he was dressed in a mix. He had on a very nice brown suit, and then over the top of it, he had this ill-fitting trench coat that was black. And it was a mix of like nice clothing and ill-fitting clothing that passengers noted, and that we got a very mixed description of him because of that.
Right. Okay. Because I suppose the popular myth is that D.B. Cooper, and he was dressed like he'd just come from a ball or something. Wasn't quite like that. Now he attracts the attention of an air hostess, and he shows her the suitcase. And inside it seems to be a bomb. Did he bring that with him, or did he leave it behind on the plane?
He must have either took it with him when he jumped from the plane, or he threw it from the plane, because it was not there when it landed in Reno, Nevada.
Okay, so we don't know if it was actually a bomb or not.
No, we don't. And that's a big debate in the Cooper community.
Yeah. Now, when the plane landed and refueled, and you know, now it was 1971, I suppose things may have been different then. Afterwards, were there many questions asked as to why the plane was allowed to take off again? Why the money was handed over to him?
So at the time, the FBI allowed the victim of the crime, the victim of embezzlement, to do what they wanted. And the president of the airline decided that they were going to cooperate with the hijacker, which was pretty much the standard at the time. The FBI had a couple of mishaps before this where pilots had been killed and innocent people had been killed in gunfights with the FBI. So the airlines didn't want the FBI doing anything, and they didn't want to damage the aircraft or lose a pilot or lose passengers. So the president of the airline instructed the FBI to stand back and let them do this. And then the FBI would take over after the hijacking was done.
Okay, and he asked for the money, he got the money, and four parachutes. Is it clear why four parachutes?
It's not exactly. The primary conjecture is that he had to make sure that he got good parachutes. And the way to make sure you get good parachutes is to imply that you're taking a hostage with you out the back of the aircraft. Mm. And you don't want to have an innocent person in a parachute that doesn't function. So that's the main theory. Is that was the implied threat, but he never told us why. He never told anybody why.
Yeah, just from his actions, though, did it seem like he knew what he was doing?
For sure. We now have evidence not only from an author named Richard Tusaw, who wrote his book in the 1980s, and he talked to all the principal witnesses at the time, many of whom are no longer with us, but also in the FBI files. That we figured out that Cooper actually looked at the packing cards on the parachute. And that indicates a higher degree of knowledge than the FBI thought at the time regarding his parachuting abilities. It seemed like he really knew what he was doing.
Mm. Asking for $200,000, I don't know, what was the going rate for hijacking in the 70s? But was that on the high side or the low side? Or perhaps did he think they can get that amount of money in a relatively short space of time?
So there had been other hijackings where the number had ranged between $50,000 and $150,000. $200,000 in today's money is about $1.5 million U.S. dollars. So it's a significant chunk of change. It would have been life-changing money.
And so when the plane took off again, He obviously didn't indicate the crew left on the plane when or where he was going to jump out. He just did it.
Yeah, not only that, he probably didn't have a clue where he jumped. And he only gave instructions to the pilots to fly south at 10,000 feet. He wouldn't have known within 30 miles of where he jumped. Other hijackers, other copycats, had to communicate constantly with the cockpit to hit their drop zone. But Cooper did not. Cooper just told him to fly south, and at some point he just jumped.
Now, which led on to almost a mini cottage industry of speculation as to where actually he landed and whether he survived that jump or not. Where do you think he landed, Marty?
Well, he would have landed in probably Clark County in Washington, which is about, let's just say, 20 to 30 kilometers north of Portland, Oregon. So he almost got back to where the hijacking started. And he would have jumped into a populous county. About 100,000 people lived there at the time. And it was mostly agricultural fields and suburban development. So there are myths about him jumping into the Cascades or into the deep Pacific Northwest rainforest. But that's not actually where he jumped.
So he came down in this particular area. And as I understand it, a parachute was found subsequently.
Yes, and this was sort of new information. There had been rumors about this for a long time, but now, again, we get these FBI files every month. And two individuals saw a military-style parachute in the Columbia River about 5 days after the hijacking. And again, this is a long way from where we're pretty sure Cooper jumped, and the FBI ignored it. They thought this is not where Cooper jumped. It can't be Cooper's parachute. But this was right where a bridge where you would go from Washington State to Oregon State was. So the conjecture that we have is that he just simply dumped the parachute as he was driving across the bridge, either that night or whenever he did finally get out of his drop zone.
No, but if he landed in and around the outskirts of Oregon, then would it have been feasible for him to walk someplace and then get a form of transport?
Certainly. It's not a great place to hike. I've been there recently. I wouldn't recommend it, but in the middle of the night, I think you can walk safely. It's about, again, like I said, 20 or 30 kilometers. And there would have been gas stations and there would have been chances to call a friend or to hitchhike, which was common in the U.S. at the time. So definitely would have had an easy go of it once he landed.
Yeah. Now, it was November. So what would the weather have been like?
It was rainy. It wasn't great. It wasn't a storm. Again, there's a myth about Cooper that he jumped into a storm. It was not a storm. It was about 2 to 3 degrees Celsius on the ground. About a 15 knot wind. So not great, but not terrible by any means and easily survivable. It just would have been wet and cold and miserable like Portland is.
Yeah. Now, the money itself, it was 200 grand. They knew all the serial numbers. Has any of it ever shown up?
No. And the important thing to realize is the United States has what are called star notes, which are highly collectible. And we have computer guys who have been basically searching eBay for a decade, looking for these specific star notes that collectors would have pulled out of circulation. And they've never been found, and no bill has ever been found in a flag transaction, which would be any transaction over like $5,000. So we're pretty sure that he didn't spend the money, but it came out very quickly that the FBI had recorded the serial numbers and that it would be easy to think that the money was not spendable. So the going idea is that he didn't spend the money.
Even abroad, he could have spent it, but it would have been detected. It would have wended its way back to the U.S. eventually.
Well, it may have. Looking at collectors. Collectors actually travel to Mexico to find old U.S. bills because they're often in circulation or hoarded. So we believe the money could have been spent internationally or abroad and would not have trickled back to the United States. And that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah. Now, and there's a body of thought that he was actually Canadian. Why is that?
So Dan Cooper was a comic book, a Belgian comic book in the French language. Mm. And if you're looking for people who speak French without and speak English without an accent, you get Canadians in Quebec who speak French and English. And there were a lot of people who served overseas at the time that probably would have encountered the comic book in their service. So that is a theory. The other theory is, of course, is that it's in the Pacific Northwest, and Canada is only a couple hours drive away from Portland. So it would be very easy to cross that border.
Yeah. Now it was 1971. It's more than 50 years ago. Chances are D.B. Cooper is no longer with us, would you say? Because what age did people think he was who saw him?
Well, the age reports varied wildly from age 40 to about the upper limit was about 60.
Oh,
so even at the lower end, he'd be in his 90s, and he smoked about 7 or 8 cigarettes in a couple of hours. So he would be about a pack a day or 2-pack a day smoker. Very likely that he is no longer with us.
Yeah. Though in that particular situation, he might have been a bit nervous. You never know. Marty Andrade is the author of Finding D.B. Cooper. Marty, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And despite all of Marty's work there, other people have other theories. Ah, come on, says one texter. If he didn't spend the money, then surely the Occam's razor explanation is that he didn't survive the skydive. Yeah, quite possibly. D.B. Cooper has died while escaping Fox River State Penitentiary from a stab wound. I assume that's a reference to a TV show or something. Wasn't D.B. Cooper actually Don Draper? Or Jay Gatsby, indeed. Why did they not ask Tommy Lee Jones to find D.B. Cooper? Did the FBI even think to search every farmhouse, henhouse, outhouse and doghouse in the Northwest? What amateurs? That's a movie reference. Paul says the actual plane, I assume this is the plane that he hijacked, is now a home in a forest in Oregon. P.S. They did find some money years later and indicated he never survived the weather. Now, I think Marty referenced that as well. Now, maybe that's what that means. Never mind the parachute. Is there a big bag of money to be found? Well, no one knows. I bet D.B. Cooper is actually Ted Bundy. It sounds like something Ted Bundy would do to fund his nefarious lifestyle. Well, perhaps. I don't know whether he had the neck to go around hijacking lots of planes.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.